Blog Talk Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this afternoon's show. It's a bit of a first for our Engage for Success radio show today, as we're coming live from today's Guru Group event in London, where we've had 60 delegates who've spent the day considering all things to do with well-being. As I understand it, there were probably as many again on a wait list for today. So if you are one of those, then stay listening for the next half an hour, and you'll hear some of the highlights of today's events. So today, as well as being a bit of a first, we've also got a larger number of guests than normal. So today I'm joined by three guests, all of who have been involved with today's event. First of all, welcome to Jules Fidler. Jules is a professional coach. She specializes in engagement and well-being and has spent over 20 years leading organizations through change, specifically supporting employee health, well-being, and engagement. So welcome to Jules. And our second guest is Vanessa King. She's a director of the Change Space and is also on the board of Action for Happiness, who are a not-for-profit that helps build skills for psychological well-being and resilience. Vanessa's an experienced leadership, talent, and organizational development consultant and works not only nationally but internationally too. And we're also joined, our third guest is Tony Evans. Tony is founder of EGI Live. He's a member of the Engage for Success Guru Group Steering Group, and he's been busy facilitating today's event. So he's going to be joining us a little later on in the show to share some of his insights and findings and highlights of the day. So welcome to all three of you, and thank you very much for taking the time to join us on the show. So I'd like to start off with you, Vanessa, if I may. So I was saying today's Guru Group session has been all around well-being, and you've been considering all things to do with well-being. And I wonder perhaps it would be sensible to kick off by just defining our terms a little bit. And I wonder if you can just give a quick definition, Vanessa, of what we mean when we say well-being.
Well, thanks, Jo. Yeah, it's interesting because I think our definition of the word is changing, informed by science. I think it is shifting and broadening out. So it's no longer just about physical health, but I think it's incorporating the psychological and the social too. I think, put simply, I think it's both about feeling good and functioning well. So it's a combination of the two. And I think one of the definitions that we're using as a subgroup comes from the World Health Organization, and they talk about well-being being a state in which somebody's realizing their potential, can cope with the normal stresses of life, has a sense of resilience, and can work productively and fruitfully, and is actually able to make a contribution beyond themselves, beyond the organization, to the wider community. So it's a pretty wide-ranging definition, and sometimes we're hearing words like resilience, happiness, flourishing, used interchangeably. But I think the feeling good and functioning well is a great shorthand to think of.
So it's much, much more than simply thinking about employees from the perspective of their physical health and whether you're helping them give up smoking or reduce alcohol or eat a balanced diet and having brown bread sandwiches in the staff canteen. It's much bigger than that.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's all of those things and more, because if we think about psychological well-being, for example, a lot of that is informed by us feeling we've got good social connections, so it's about relationships. It's about resilient thinking and mindsets and how do we think in ways that are going to enhance our performance. And actually, I think it's also about performance enhancement. So a lot of the things that organizations are starting to look at around this topic of well-being may well be some of the strategies and ideas and concepts that are used in, say, with elite sports people to help them increase their performance. So I think it's both preventing ill health, but it's also actually how do we be the best we can be and get more out of work and get more out of life.
And for organizations, and we're obviously going to go into this in a lot more detail in the next sort of half an hour, but is it something that ought to matter?
Yes, I think it absolutely ought to matter. I mean, there's business benefits that I can talk about later when we talk about report highlights. But there's personal benefits. We know with people with higher well-being have better relationships. They're more productive. They are more creative. They respond better to feedback. There's all sorts of benefits that come from higher well-being, as well as things like lower absence, et cetera. So,
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely.
We'll get some more of that in a little while. So, Vanessa, you mentioned the word subgroup, and I know that today has all been about sharing with the wider audience the work of the Engage for Success Wellbeing Subgroup. So I wonder if I can turn now to you, Jules, to talk a little bit more for us about the Wellbeing Subgroup and what you've been up to and what the point of view is, really. So Jules, perhaps again, let's just define ourselves. What is a subgroup?
Hi, Jo, yes. Well, my definition of a subgroup is a group of like-minded people coming together from within the Engage for Success community to explore a topic that they've got particular interest in or are very passionate about. And that's quite simply what we did with this subgroup. We all had a real passion about well-being and wanted to do something about that. So we set up a subgroup.
How did you come to get involved then?
How did I become involved? Through the program director Wendy Leedham, who invited me to join Engage for Success, and we formed a great relationship. And one conversation, just networking over an event, I asked whether there was any subgroups that were looking at wellbeing because that's my speciality. And from that, Wendy had explained when Engage for Success initially launched that there was a subgroup that looked at well-being, but it had since done its piece of work and dissolved, and I asked her whether there was any desire to maybe look at well-being in a much more practical point of view, 12 months on from the launch of Engage for Success, and see whether we could really explore the topic further. So that's how it came about. Now, and Wendy went away.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No. Go on.
When did it start? Yeah. So we started last summer, last August. We got together, and there's 12 of us who are in the subgroup, and there's a real mix of expertise, both academic. We've got some consultancy in there. Wendy Cartwright is kindly was our chair for this, and she's been fantastic in really driving the project through to get some outputs today. It's been a really interactive group. It's been great to work with, and I think we've achieved quite a bit. So since summer last year, we formed, and throughout August, towards the end of the year, we asked the subgroups for a call for evidence. So can we get some linkage between well-being, engagement, and performance? And we got lots of responses from the Engage with Success group, giving us some case studies, some evidence-based work. And we spent a long time, all of us, all 12 of us, going through all that evidence and sifting it to see if we could do a paper called Nailing the Evidence.
Along the lines of the original Nailing the Evidence paper that Engage for Success did at launch, but specifically honing down into the topic of well-being.
And I think Wendy was right in saying that we stick to a format that we know works. So to promote ourselves as a subgroup, we've been doing lots of work since January. We had a radio show with Wendy that you hosted earlier on in the year. We've done lots of case studies, and then we're getting ready for those to go up on the website. March, as you know, is Wellbeing Month, hence today, last day of the month, kind of finalising with today's event. And we expect towards the end of April that the final part of this group will be publishing our wellbeing and engagement evidence report that Wendy and Bruce have kind of put together for us.
Excellent. So that will be the sort of culmination of what you've been working on really for the last sort of 9-10 months then.
Yes, that will be our outputs and our blood and sweat, which has been great. It's been hard work, it's been fantastic, and we've had some really enlightening feedback from everybody from it.
Fantastic. Well, that's I guess what we'd like to move on to talk about next, if I may. So I think you've been sharing with the delegates there today some of those findings. You've been giving them a little bit of a sort of foretaste of what's to come. So I wonder, Vanessa, whether you could just share with us some of those highlights and some of the key findings that you've been talking about today.
Sure. So, well, first I'd like to say thanks to Wendy Cartwright and to Bruce Rayton, who've really been leading the charge in pulling together all the evidence and pulling together the report. So, I mean, they've been great. And the report itself, when it comes out in April, people will find sort of evidence, both coming from academic research and also from some pretty extensive research that happens in consultancies and research houses. So looking really at what is well-being? Why does it matter? How does it link to engagement? How do we measure it? We've got a couple of models in there which are really lovely visual kind of summaries of some of the key things that we hope people will find useful as discussion tools and to fuel debate and inform within their organizations. And we've also got lots of examples of good practice from small and large organizations, from kind of whole strategic approaches to single interventions. So that's the kind of overview of the report. But I think there's what's interesting in there is we are finding that organisations are certainly paying more attention to well-being, and it's actually moving up the strategic agenda. I think partly this is because workplaces, they can certainly be a force for good in terms of building well-being, but they can also contribute to, you know, ill-being, if you like, through
the opposite.
Overwork. Through workload, change in initiatives, management style. So there's lots of ways that organisations influence our well-being. But there are also places where we can really find a sense of purpose, develop our skills, really, build our strength and develop our potential in organisations. So they can be, you know, a force for good and a force for evil, if you like. Well, evil's a bit too strong, but, you know what I mean.
Evil's a bit strong, I think.
So moving up the strategic agenda, partly because I think there's now growing evidence that this stuff makes a difference. So, for example, there's research that shows when you look at the best companies to work for example, those organizations in the top list of best companies to work for and look at their stock market returns over, say, a 10-year period. There was research done looking between 2000 and 2010. The best companies to work for, so these are organizations that take well-being and engagement seriously, outperformed their stock market averages by, so 10% compared to around 4%. So that's serious kind of benefits there. And we're also seeing things that things like customer service. So we see organizations with high levels of well-being have much higher better customer feedback. So, for example, in another indices of best companies to work for, we saw that the top 20 organizations, there, if we took them, customers rated them, 95% of their customers said the service was great, compared to organizations at the bottom of that list where only 25% of their customers said the service was great. So that's some real, really sort of interesting hard metrics. There's also evidence to suggest that, you know, when people feel good at work, they're more productive. So by as much as 12%, and there's some emerging sort of causal evidence there, not just correlational. And certainly evidence by organizations like Towers Watson suggests that, you know, well-being plus engagement plus well-being delivers more than engagement alone.
Now that's a very interesting point there, Vanessa, because that was, I suppose, one of the things that I think listeners will be interested in learning is the difference between well-being and engagement. You know, I think sometimes they can get you used in, they're not, you know, they can kind of become a little bit mutually interchangeable if you're not careful, can't they? And there is actually some differentiation between the two that suggests actually when you add the two together, you get a better output than if you just focus on one on its own.
Yeah, and it's quite hard to isolate them completely, because certainly the research summarizes some of the evidence that engagement and well-being are intrinsically linked. So we know that if we look at the top quartile of engaged employees, for example, they have 48% fewer safety incidences and 37% lower absence rates. So there's an integral link there. And there's a link that goes beyond just the workplace. So we also know that if employees are engaged at work, they're three times more likely to rate their lives as thriving outside of work. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. And it's some of the things.
Sorry, go on. I was just going to say, could we perhaps drill a little bit deeper down into some of the specifics now? Because I think you and Jules were sharing some case studies today, weren't you, with the team?
Yeah.
And wonder whether you could perhaps tell us a little bit about that. I
shared the example of BT, who is obviously one of the biggest companies in the UK, but are actually in 170 countries, have about 90,000 employees, and they've probably got one of the most sort of comprehensive strategic frameworks for well-being, and use engagement as a key measure of that, and it's been very well established. They have it's been developed by their chief medical officer, Dr. Paul Ishfield, and their chief health advisor, Dr. Catherine Kilferda, who's a clinical psychologist. And it's been in place now for about 11 years and developing all the time. And they look at interventions at both helping people who have got sick and how to get them the right treatment, get them back to work, and help think about how the workplace needs to adapt to accommodate them coming back. A lot of work's gone on now into early intervention, so spotting people with signs of stress, for example, and how do you intervene to stop that? So both for, say, managers, but also for individuals themselves. I mean, there's been a growing emphasis now on self-service, people helping themselves and learning about how to manage their own well-being, but with that sort of resource, sort of menu of products and services that people can tap into. And interestingly now, moving upstream to look at interventions that really help build resilience in the organization and build that sort of well-being, that performance enhancement piece that we're talking about. And they have both a sort of strategic framework and a group-wide framework of products and services around this, very different from training, intervention, online support, telephone support, face-to-face support, lots of literature and awareness raising. And then all the different lines of businesses have their own senior sponsorships within for health and well-being, as well as HR support within those. So there's both a strategic overall corporate plan and a line of business plan, and then routes that individuals and individual managers can access support and help that they need. So, and we've been working at Action for Happiness. We've been working with BT to develop a program for managers which looks at their management style. So we know that management style is one of the biggest causes of long-term absence through stress at work. So what is it? How do we help managers manage in a way that builds engagement and enhances well-being and enhances performance? So it's a pretty interesting journey, and great to be working with an organization that's at the leading edge, really.
So I wondered, Jules, perhaps you could come in here and talk about, I think it's some similar sort of work in the Department of Health, is that right? And I wondered, have you seen sort of similar things going on there?
Absolutely, Jo, and I had the great privilege to do a big piece of work with the Department of Health to create and deliver the Health and Wellbeing Employee Program. And I talked more on a level of how you can create a business model and a strategy using the Engage for Success for Enablers and a recognized framework around well-being, of which I chose to use 5 ways to well-being through the New Economics Foundation. And when you put those two things together, you really give yourself a really good action plan that can help you deliver employee well-being at a very kind of cost-effective and purposeful way. So some of the things I talked about this afternoon at our guru session was around how you can offer signposting interventions and support and working with the right stakeholders, businesses that are mutually beneficial. For example, in the Department of Health, I work very closely with some third sector organizations such as Mind and Rethink as charities to really help on the mental health well-being. We worked with the unions. We worked with occupational health. So we had this massive framework where we could identify from our consultation, well-being does mean something different to everybody, Joe, but we categorized it into physical well-being, emotional well-being, and workplace well-being, and that way people were easily, employees in the organization could pinpoint themselves to what really mattered to them on that day, because we had a whole conversation about the whole person comes to work and not just the hand. So one day you might need some emotional support. Another day you might need some workplace support, like, you know, your computer isn't working, etc. So it's about how you access all those points and how small things can make big differences.
From your perspective as well, talking about the Department of Health, obviously it's a, you know, it's public sector, it's taxpayers' money. So the looking to explore ways of actually delivering all of that through third parties or other organisations, so perhaps not necessarily ascribing direct costs to those things, is quite a something that's quite useful and replicable for other organisations who are similarly constrained from a budget perspective. Would that be right?
Well, absolutely, Joe. That was my brief. You've got to deliver this. Cost, there is none. So be innovative and creative. And given that they write the national policies around public health, it was really important that our strapline and our leadership line was we should be practicing what we preach. So that we're looking at ourselves and we're offering exactly the same thing to our employees as we're suggesting people in the public domain do and what other employees do. And that resonated right throughout the organisation and made a huge impact. And that really gave some employee voice and some support and some buy-in. And that's how it became sustainable. You know, we had some real good measures on that. Sickness reduced by 10% in the first year. Engagement scores went up. I was able to share a short video this afternoon around mental health in the workplace where people volunteered to, if you like, self-disclose their mental health conditions in a very positive way that helped remove stigma and discrimination. And it is about, as Vanessa says, small interventions all added up together can make a huge impact.
Yes, yes. And now I presume that when the report comes out, will there be more information on some of these case studies in that report, Jules? Is that what's planned?
Well, we've got a number of case studies in the report, but and it's not the full case studies because we just put snippets in. But Raimi is going to upload all the full case studies onto the website, including the Department of Health, and I'm sure BT will give permission too. If people want to know more, obviously they can get in touch with me direct, Joe. But yes, as far as I know, Raimi is going to upload them all this month.
Excellent. Okay, lovely. Well, thank you, Jules. Hopefully we've now got Tony with us. So Tony
I'm here.
Good. So you've been the main facilitator, I think, for today. So how's it all gone, Tony?
Well, it's gone very quickly, I have to tell you, and I suspect that means that it's gone very well as well. It's been a really rich day of learning, of reflecting and conversation where we've had around 50 of the guru group who've been kind enough to give up their day today and come together in London and to focus on this whole conversation around well-being and engagement.
And I think they've been some of the work as well as the sharing of some of the findings of the subgroup, which Vanessa and Jules have been talking about in the last first part of the program. I think part of the session today was getting the gurus to do some work and brainstorming around some key questions around well-being. And I wondered whether perhaps we can kind of close off this afternoon's show with you just sharing perhaps some of those highlights. Have there been any particular highlights from that process that you think are worth sharing with our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. It was it was a rich conversation. We spent most of this afternoon really responding to what we'd heard and learned this morning, and we looked at a range of different questions around where maybe the focus should be, how this might become more of a mainstream aspect of business success, what sort of measurements there are, and I think in truth, there's a lot of there was quite a lot of conversation and debate around the degree to which evidence was there, but even also the degree to which one needed evidence. And I think that's a debate that's going to run and run. One of the things that was particularly interested me, and I think it's going to turn into something that has some outputs as well. It's very exciting. We were present at the birth of a SIG. A lot of the debate went around the style of performance management that is in place, and there was a suggestion that, and I think there's generally broad agreement on this, that performance management systems really are, if you like, the governance of culture in many ways, and they determine what is on the agenda and what is prioritized, and very simply by the fact of what it is that we're measuring. And there was a real desire in the room to understand more how well-being and engagement could really get up the priority list there. We were luckily joined by Nita Clark, who gave us an update on the wider group and also on the transactional to transformation journey that they're on, and she made a reference to, I think, the NHS, who now have particularly engagement as one of the measures, one of their 8 priorities. And so going back to the idea of performance management, a number of people have kindly put their hands up and committed to starting a SIG, a special interest group, focused on that, to see what the criteria are at the moment and to ask the question of what criteria is there, either on organizations that are delivering a high level of well-being and a high level of engagement, and maybe shine a light on some good practice that we can expand.
That's interesting. I suspect that kind of links back a little bit to what Vanessa was talking about in her in the case study she was talking about for the BT, in terms of looking at the impact of a manager's style on the well-being of their direct reports, and I guess how individual managers interpret an organization's performance management process and how they deliver that can have a key impact upon the way that their people respond and feel as a result. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, I think so. I think the manager seems to be at the hub of a lot of these challenges. They're at the they've got the close relationship with a large number of employees. They've got a dynamic level of responsibility and accountability. I think they really are the crossroads, and I think the questions that come up there are not just what is it that they're tasked with, but also how does the organization give them the capacity to be able to deliver the style of management that enables both well-being and engagement. There's been quite a few years now where there's either been operational efficiency or simply the sort of the austere times of recession where capacity and any spare capacity has been completely driven out of a lot of organizations. I think there's probably a question about whether that capacity needs to go back in as well as a different set of priorities.
Right. Interesting. So that certainly, as you say, sort of seems to have struck quite a rich theme for future. We're just coming up to the kind of closing sort of minute of the show, really, Tony. Any other particular highlights that you just want to quickly share with us before we close?
Well, I think it would just be good to emphasise, if I can, as we did have a guru group meeting and we created a SIG, just really to extend our thanks for people who came along and in a sense, apologize to those who weren't able to make it or weren't it, because we did have a very strong waiting list for this. We're very aware of the interest that there is in mm-hmm. these meetings.
Well,
it was
great.
It was very much reflected.
Let me, sorry, cut you short there and have to thank all of you now for joining us this afternoon. And I'll pass on Tony's thanks to contributing and joining today's event. Thank you all very much.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.